Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks. Don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby. And today I'm joined by Tyler Lazard, who is the CMO over at Technology Advice. Tyler, thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Mason.
Well, I'm super excited to dig into it. For those of you that don't know Tyler, first of all, miss on your part. Like, let's just call it what it is. Really incredible leader in the marketing space that has worked at some incredible companies like Vidyard and is currently at Technology Advice. So if you're in the marketing space, go follow Tyler on LinkedIn. And I'm excited to dig into it because you have not only built ABM in a couple different organizations, but also many of the clients that you worked with had ABM use cases. So I'm excited to kind of dig into both how you've done it and how you recommended some of your clients do it and seen some success in that space. So that said, the first place to always start with account-based marketing is targeting. So as you think about like how you approach building the actual list of accounts that we want to focus in on, what are some of your recommendations and best practices around identifying that target account list?
Yeah, I always like to start with figuring out some really clear commonalities amongst the folks that we're going after. I got a perfect example, my life here as CMO at Technology Advice. When I joined the business about a year and a half ago, our target market was generally B2B marketing leaders or demand gen leaders. And that was very clearly just too broad for us to do anything of material impact within the community. And we found ourselves spending a lot of money on programs that were generating a lot of leads outside of our ICP and frankly, just not many within our true target accounts. So we really started there by breaking it down into specific industry subsegments. It's a common place for a lot of marketers to start. We looked at within the B2B software space, which is really where we focus on. Yeah, you know, we took a hard look at like, where do we win? And that was kind of the easiest place to start. We said, look, let's find these groups and clusters of accounts that we know we can win in day after day. And for us, that led back to things like, we know we can win with cybersecurity software vendors. We know we can win with HR tech vendors. And there are reasons behind those, but we really broke it down and said, okay, let's pick two or three of these specific segments and now figure out who are the top 10, 30, 100 accounts within those markets we want to go after and start there. And it's a pretty common approach, again, to start at maybe the industry level or a geography. But for us, that was seemingly simple, but honestly, a pretty big breakthrough for us to be able to really dig in and go, how do we attack this part of the market?
I love it. One question I always like to dig into is for those that are kind of first making this kind of segmented approach. I mean, you just said your SMB was super broad. And sometimes when we talk to leadership teams about, hey, what if we get segmented down? We get the question, well, why would we limit the number of people we want to work with? So I'm curious, as you navigated some of that internally, like, was that question brought up? Was that something that was like, oh, we know this is the right next step? Like, how did that actually play out internally?
Yeah, there's, you know, never a case where you don't want to do business with more. But I think for me, it really came down to going into that storyline with our CRO, with our CEO, with complementary information about what does this really mean? Like, how are we going to go out and attack this part of the market? So it wasn't just about, hey, we just want to focus here. It was, hey, we want to focus here. Here's why. And here are some initial ideas for the types of tactics and programs that we want to bring into this base. Because doing that allowed them to get that additional context and understanding of like, what does this really mean in practice? Because often as marketers, we don't do a good enough job of that, right? We assume that our other leadership partners or our CEO have, you know, a good understanding of what we actually do on a day-to-day basis. And often that's frankly not the case. So when you go in and say, I want to actually focus our efforts, they'll often think, why can't you just do it all? And so I think going in with that context helps a lot. The second thing is going in with support from field level sales reps. And this, again, went a long way for us where before we actually decided ourselves where we wanted to focus and brought that message to the rest of the team, we, of course, like any good marketers, spoke with a number of our reps who are out there pounding the pavement in the field, talking to customers every day. and we took their feedback. We then went back and we bounced these ideas off of them to actually try to poke holes in our own strategy, right? We actually went to them and said, like, why wouldn't we focus our energy in this part of the market, right? And we listened to their feedback of like why they would or wouldn't take that approach. And that was really helpful as well, because then when we take that message again back to the CRO, back to the VP of sales, back to the CEO, we have that both anecdotal and kind of quantitative feedback from our own data, from the sales team to help validate some of those approaches. And again, it also helped us contextualize with them, here's how we would partner with sales to take these things forward. So I think a lot of that is very, very helpful. And I really encourage you all, of course, not just for your ABM programs, but generally as you are pitching or recommending new initiatives, have that context so that they're not making a lot of assumptions about how it is you might be approaching that part of the market.
Really love that framing. We tell people don't build a target account list that you pitch to leadership without already having sales buy-in on it. Yeah. So it sounds like, again, you took a data-backed approach and then validated it through, I don't know where I picked this up, but I refer to it as anecdata. So it's like, oh yeah, like I would love to go get those companies. And then you've got marketing and sales actually aligned to go to leadership. That's awesome.
Yeah. And one of the other things there, just Mason, I'll emphasize is that also pulling things like your win rates in those markets, your average deal sizes. Again, these are things that many of you are probably already thinking about. But when you can communicate in those terms back to the other members of leadership, it helps you create also an efficiency story. So we want to focus here because we know if we spend a dollar here, we have a higher chance of winning that account. They have a higher chance of being a long-term customer and they have a higher average deal size, ACV, and so on. And so being, you know, you don't always have all of that data depending on where you're at in your journey. But when you can bring some of those numbers to the table, not just for a like, this is a $10 billion opportunity, because every market's a big opportunity. It's about that efficiency of, we know if we go after this part of the market or these specific accounts, the ROI will be higher, you know, if we execute effectively.
Really, really love the pulling of win rates and ACV, and actually then having not just, hey, there's a large market, but there's a large market where we historically actually win at a higher rate, at a higher deal size.
Yeah.
We should probably go get more of those. I love that framing. So when you then think about, okay, we've now segmented down by verticals, the big question that people then always ask is, okay, well, how do I actually get in front of these people? So as you think about actually then activating a program, like what were some of the channels that you ended up moving into, and how did you determine the right channels for these audiences?
Hey, look, if any of you listening or watching have ideas for me to how to actually get in front of these people effectively, I'm all ears, because it's tough these days, man. It is harder than ever to get attention from different accounts. And I mean that in all sincerity. It feels like it's tougher and tougher every year as marketers to really get noticed out there and stand out. But a few of the things that I've found are working for us, and again, it's going to be a little bit different in every space, every market. But, you know, we have seen a lot of success going back to the good old roots of in-person activations. We've found, you know, great success with running some in-person events, being ancillary programs at different industry conferences, places we know folks will be finding reasons for us to get out there in their local region and inviting them out to learn about the latest research that we've published, to connect with some of their peers in the market and us as a facilitator to bring them together. So some of those things have been working very well over the last couple of years. And I've been almost honestly impressed with the success that we've seen with in-person activations. Addition to that, kind of the digital variant of that is we continue to see a lot of success with genuine, fresh thought leadership, primary research that we're doing out there in the market, doing things that genuinely offer value to these accounts, like not just like lipstick on a pig kind of value of like a great blog post that, you know, we spent more than 20 minutes writing, but like very genuine market research that we're doing, things that we invest in to bring value to that community, and using those as real anchor points for these enterprise accounts. You know, of course, you developing that great thought leadership and using it as a reason to reach out to those accounts. But then, of course, also activating it through things like, you know, webinar formats, other types of video formats, activating it with your sales reps and your SDRs as, again, creating reasons for them to reach out through that that research and that content. And we've actually created a micro program. I use the term a couple times. They're called Reasons to Reach Out, where we are intentionally, as a marketing team, creating quote unquote reasons to reach out for our sales and SDR team to engage those accounts. And we're consistent with that. So when we'll produce that research, it's going to create three or four different reasons for them to reach out to unveil a new stat, to invite them to a webinar, to encourage them to come to our next event in town, where we're going to be bringing some thought leaders together or some of their peers to discuss this latest research. And then we'll follow that up with some other reasons to reach out, which may be, you know, a new product or service announcement or something else that they might be interested in. So there's a lot of different activations that we're seeing that, you know, can and still work today. But a lot of these things are just, you know, it's really specific, these kind of like grunt level things where you can genuinely get their attention through offering value and building a real relationship that isn't just, you know, superficial outreach.
I first love the call out on in-person events. It has been something that we've seen our most successful clients have intentionally curated. These events are where our buyers are going. And then all the digital that we're doing on top of then, oh, like, let me actually shake your hand and meet you in person, has been the thing that we have seen source and accelerate the most deals. Now, for everyone that's listening, I want to be super clear. It's not, we only did the event. Like, it's not, we bought a ticket, we showed up, but it's the event, everything around it that creates both the ongoing constant engagement, plus then the acceleration of the relationship through meeting in person. So
yeah,
love that framing. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say we had a really nice example of that recently where we, you know, doing it in a cost-effective, you know, somewhat scrappy mode, we, you know, really tried to figure out like where, I mean, like we all do, like what are the watering holes? Where are the folks we're trying to reach actually, you know, going out both in digital and in the real world. And we sort of happened upon this, you know, pretty simple idea that there's a number of folks from the marketing teams. Not only do some of them go to actual like B2B marketing events, obviously there's a handful of those that attract good audiences, but we also realized that a lot of them are going to the industry conferences that they're sponsoring as a vendor. And so, for example, I mentioned that, you know, we do really well in like cybersecurity as a segment. So last year, we made sure that we had a presence at the RSA conference, which is not actually a marketing conference. It's a cybersecurity conference, but we knew there would be like literally hundreds of cybersecurity vendors who we can target who had booths there and sponsorships. And most of them had at least a couple people from their marketing team there supporting the event. So we partnered up with a couple of others and hosted a marketer's dinner, sorry, a happy hour at RSA that was targeting all those hardworking marketers who were there supporting their booths, running the event, and, you know, offered them a great opportunity to get away from the chaos of the event and come meet some of your fellow marketers who are also there. And so there's like little things like that where you can say, look, I didn't have to do like a $20,000 event sponsorship. I found where there was a group of these people congregating and just find some like interesting ways to get their attention, to show that you understand them, you're part of that community, and almost create that kind of community feel with them. And that's a great example where we were able to meet a lot of target accounts on our, you know, top list of cybersecurity vendors we were trying to engage and build those one-on-one relationships. Again, at the event, it was not selling at all, right? It was relationship building. It was creating that brand familiarity. But after the event, to your point, we had already planned that 2 weeks later, we'd be hosting a webinar on the top trends in cybersecurity marketing. And 2 weeks after that, there was going to be another activation point and another. And so it was a tentpole moment in that journey we were creating for that segment. And our goal there was really to find 5 or 10 of those key customers that we're focused on. Yeah, there were some other ones that came along for the ride, but to get a handful of those in our target account list and say, look, if we can get 2 or 3 of these ABM accounts into a conversation with our sales team, that's a win for what that program looked like. And you know, we saw that in spades with that program, which, again, a great example of that kind of multi-channel activation with that in-person event as a tentpole moment to build the one-to-one relationship.
There's a lot of what you just outlined that I love, but I want to most specifically hone in on, it wasn't a marketing conference. Like, it was a cybersecurity conference, and you talked about, we got to find our watering holes. And I'd actually push and say, it sounds like you created your own watering hole. Like, there were not marketers that were going to congregate at this event. They happened to be there. And then you created the opportunity for there to even be a watering hole in the context of something that otherwise would not have. And I think that is super smart, and likely you had zero competition to get the marketers there. Like, because everybody else was probably hosting happy hours for all the cybersecurity professionals, not the marketers that happen to be there.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. And it's one of those things where you just, you know, you think through and you try to find those edge cases of, again, how can I find these group of people? But it really does come back to like that extreme empathy for your audience, like anything in great marketing, is like really stepping back and almost like having a beginner's mind around, okay, like what are these, you know, where are these people activating themselves? What are they doing on a day-to-day basis? Sort of learning about that and just thinking creatively about where and how you can engage them in some of these cases. Because again, the core channels are challenging to stand out on and get people's attentions. But there's, you know, other examples of that in the digital space are these, like, you know, we all know there's, you know, the power of like niche influencers, newsletters, right? Like you're trying to find like, where are these like sort of like special, very niche places, either digitally or in person, where I can find some of these folks and like, let's really stand out on those ones. So rather than spending a huge amount of money on trying to get this massive reach and, you know, in the hustle newsletter where, you know, I'm going to get great breadth and great general awareness, but like, let's flip that over and go like, what are those very niche communities where some of these folks might be, and let's go bigger there and try to find 5 or 6 of those key contacts at those key accounts and use that as a chance to kind of build that either digital or in-person relationship.
Super smart. The other thing you outlined that I just don't see as many organizations doing is creating original research. So it's easy to create content, and I'll actually call us out. We cite a lot of data and research from other organizations because we're right. Small and haven't had the time yet. But like when you create the research, you actually then become the thing that other people point back to. So I love that thought process around the content. Would you be willing to share, just because there's tons of people that have like a content playbook, how are you guys standardly repurposing those original pieces of research into then all these different moments where you can create reasons to reach out?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of examples of how, you know, some people might call it like the hub and spoke model, or there's other ways to think about it. But like, I mean, a perfect example that we do an annual buyer insights report. And for us, the reason that we chose to do a buyer insights or kind of buying trends report is that as a brand, technology advice, we have a tremendous amount of first party insight and knowledge into buying behaviors because we own and operate, you know, a number of different media sites. We are tracking and seeing accounts and individuals that are actively researching lots of different technologies. So we have some unique value add there to be able to understand buying trends. And so, you know, part of our mission from a content and a brand perspective is to be a leading trusted source of market and buyer trends for our community. And so that's a great place to start for those of you who, you know, maybe don't have a well-formulated content or thought leadership strategy. I actually really like to start with kind of a mission statement, not for our brand, but for our actual content and thought leadership. So for us, we want to be one of their leading sources for buyer and market insights. So hinged on that, we have an anchor annual report that combines some of our own first-party data that we have exclusive access to, which is great. But a lot of it is survey-based data of folks across the market to, you know, get a pulse on what their latest buying trends are. Again, in our case, it asks questions related to what types of content formats are they most commonly engaging with? What types of research information are they actually looking for during different stages of a potential buying process? You know, how much weight do different types of information sources carry, and so on? And so it's really about, you know, just again, putting in the grind of, you know, getting out there, surveying folks in the community, finding first party data. And we often also supplement it with other information from the market, you know, much like you said, that your organization will do. And there's absolutely no shame in that because those are equally valuable insights to the community. And so we'll pull those together into a hero research report, which acts as that anchor. So obviously we'll promote that in a number of different ways. But yes, we host actually multiple webinars as an extension to that. So we'll typically host like a primary one, which is revealing the latest, you know, trends and stats, which, you know, is sort of broadly appealing to our ecosystem. But then we might also do activations of some of the subdata. So we'll say, oh, of the SMB specific audience, we're going to do a specific activation over here. And we're going to promote that to our community members that we know primarily target SMB. And, you know, we'll slice out the data and specifically dive into that. So there's a few different ways that we kind of plan ahead to know how can we slice and dice this data for different subsets of our audience and then have kind of some more niche activations. Hey, I don't care if I only get 20 people out to that webinar. if there are 20 of the right people, or heck, even 5 of the right people that get value from it, and maybe one of them gets into a conversation with our team afterwards, right? That's a win for our team if that's a key account. So we think about that both for webinars. We do the same for like other forms of content, of course, like blog posts that are then easily repurposable by our sales team. We create social posts for them with nice little, you know, infographic style images that they can use to either drive people to the blog post, which then links back to the on-demand version of the webinar. So there's lots of different activation points that you can find. We also then create sort of a derivative narratives from that, that we will go out and pitch to different, you know, third-party media. We'll go out to folks who have communities of B2B marketers, and we'll basically like sort of pitch them on a narrative related to the article, sort of traditional PR in many ways, if you will, of, you know, letting them know, hey, we've seen this interesting, you know, trend year over year. We've got kind of a bit of a story around it. Would you be interested in peeling that back, or maybe even featuring us on your next podcast? So there's lots of different ways in which you can activate those things within the community and then leverage them both for your broad programs, but also to really promote specifically to some of those target accounts.
I just love the simple framing of, once we've identified our sub verticals that we're focused in on, which is how we started the conversation, we actually curate the survey data that we gather to make sure that we can then create offshoots of original research that are dedicated to that. Because as I have been thinking through this, and again, we're starting to get more into the research space, I was thinking entire dedicated research studies for just those audiences. And you just saved me probably hundreds of hours of like, well, no, just like one big survey, but get industry information. And then you can easily segment and create off spends or spinoffs of the original research. Super smart framing.
Yeah.
As we think about, you've alluded to it a couple different times, but I love the specificity of, if we had 20 people show up to the webinar and 5 of those were the right accounts, that's a win. So I'm curious, as you think about how you measure success for your programs, what are some of the key things that you're looking for to know that a program is either winning or losing?
Yeah, you know, it's a big part of it, honestly, does end up being that almost qualitative assessment of like, are we reaching the right people? Are the right people raising their hand, showing interest, and spending time with our message, right? Like whether it's just like, did they actually open the damn email and read it and, you know, take the time? Or did they engage with the content? Did they attend the webinar? Did they ask questions, right? So, you know, some of it really is as simple as that. And that's actually sometimes the hardest data to pull because it's not as quantitative. There's, you know, typically, you know, you can't just go like hit a button and it tells you, oh yeah, the quality of your engaged audience was 8 out of 10, right? Often there's a nuance to it, but that's often where the goodness lies. So in addition to the obvious things like, you know, are we, you know, did we see a good number of downloads or registrants or response rates? Obviously, you know, did those individuals or contacts or accounts convert into a lead or pipeline? Those are the obvious things. But outside of that, that kind of qualitative assessment, because I've certainly found that where we've done, take a webinar as a good example, right? We've done a webinar, we got 150 registrants, 70 of them showed up live, you know, great engagement. And like, I'm like patting myself on the back, like for a small marketing team, that was a big win. But then, you know, you look at the data and you go, oh, like, it's only like very small number of these folks. Like most of them are, you know, small agencies or this or that. I mean, just folks who aren't in our ICP and none of whom are actually in our real target account list. So you always have to have that overlay as you're looking at these programs of almost that sanity check of like, did we reach the right people? Are we seeing real engagement from those folks? And of course, you know, are we able to then progress them down funnel? But it all starts like right back at that first moment of, did we engage the right people? And if not, what's the problem? Is it the targeting? Is it the messaging? Is it the value of what you're offering? Is it that they have absolutely no brand awareness from you and you didn't have a shot to start with? Right? Like there are lots of reasons that could lead to not finding and getting the right people. And so that's really where I like to start. And again, take a little bit of that qualitative lens to make sure that, you know, you're holding yourself accountable to not just the numbers, but also to that quality of engagement or attendee or, you know, lead at the end of the day.
Yeah. Whenever we do an activation, we use our 4D framework of just data, distribution, destination, and direction, which is just like, how do we know we're going after the right people? How do we know we use the right channels? How do we make sure we have the right content or offer? And then did we track it correctly? And we use that as kind of the diagnostic tool for when things go well. We're like, awesome, How do we do that again? And when things don't go well, it's like, okay, where did we have a breakdown? So, I mean, you just walk through it using, again, audiences, channels, offer, and then measurement. So I really, really love that framing. The last question I've got for you is just, if somebody's building their first ABM program, what's one piece of advice that you wish you had had before you got started?
Honestly, start small is like something that I, you know, I wish we had done more of. I think we did a pretty good job. I spent a lot of time in my life as head of marketing at Vidyard, doing a lot of different ABM programs. We did a nice job, but in hindsight, and something I've carried forward to technology advice is, yeah, really being intentional about starting small, starting specific, even to the point of like partnering with an individual sales rep and saying, look, I'm going to, instead of like even like partnering with the mid-market team or the SMB team or the enterprise team or in this geography, we're going to go and partner with Sarah. And we know Sarah has a list of like top accounts she really is going after. And we're going to try to find two or three that have sort of a commonality within that. So they're all financial services accounts maybe. And let's start there and see if we can prove a few things out, or at least like build a program or an engagement model or a campaign that we're all excited about, that we all go, you know what, this like feels like it should work. And whether or not it will work for these three accounts, like who knows, like maybe none of them are actually actively looking and we, you know, we might miss, we don't know. But like, let's create something that we're all excited about, that we think has the right idea, the right potential momentum. And like, let's start getting out there and testing it out and then slowly building out from there. But I think if you can build something that you're really excited about to go after one, two, or three accounts, then you can start to like build on that and say like, how do we expand this out in a way that makes sense? That's where I would like to, you know, where I would encourage folks to start. It's hard to do because, again, to your earlier, you know, kind of where we started the conversation is you're going to get those questions from a lot of folks of like, you're not thinking big enough. Like, and you might say, you know what, not yet. And you're right. I'm intentionally not thinking too big because, frankly, I don't want to burn a lot of money and resources on something that we are not, you know, feeling great about, you know, being the right thing. So where you can start small, both to like test, but also just like sometimes that's when your best ideas come out, right? Like when you have those constraints, that actually can be very helpful to the creative process, right? Like if you're a musician and you're just told, hey, go write a great song. You're like, wow, like I have massive creative freedom. That's incredible. And there you are like 3 weeks later going like, I don't even know where the hell to start, right? But then if it's like, you know, I want you to go write an amazing song about this in this genre with this best, then you can actually become way more creative and you can really lean into it. Anyway, like to start there. And that's a long-winded way of me to say, start specific, start small, and go from there.
Could not agree more. And the only thing I want to add on to that is just, as you think about then measuring success, if you start really small, you don't have to have perfectly nailed down dashboards because you can literally look at the accounts and say, sure, with these five accounts and now 10 people just registered for the next webinar from this account. And like, I don't know quite yet how to show that on a dashboard, but I know it's working. So if you data small, it's easier to track. So that's just the other thing I always like to call out for people is small numbers make it easy to stay close to the data. So like, Tyler, this has been a great episode. Thank you so much for digging into it. If people want to find out more about you or technology advice, where would you point them?
Please follow me on LinkedIn and connect there. And to learn more about technology advice, who actually helps companies across the board activate their ABM programs by reaching audience members across our ecosystem, you can check out solutions.technologyadvice.com.
I love it. Tyler, thanks so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you want to do an even deeper dive on building out your ABM program, we're actually hosting our next ABM in a Day workshop on November 13th. It is a full 6 hours digging into all of the reasons ABM programs fail and exactly how to fix them. And I know what you're thinking, 6 hours is a huge time investment. Admittedly, it is, but it's taking 6 hours to ensure you nail the next 6 months of your ABM program. In case you're wondering, is it worth it? The last time we hosted it, we got a 9.3 out of 10 on our content. So I can guarantee this is a worthwhile time investment to ensure you nail your ABM program. So if that sounds like something you'd like to do, go to scrappyabm.com/workshop to register today, and we'll see you on November 13th.